Hey, you guys, this is Tara, and welcome to the Horse Trader's Diary. So it's been a minute. I won't lie. It's been a minute since I've had time to do a podcast, and, well, we're on the road. So Aspen and I decided that we would catch up podcasting. So I have Aspen with me.
Hi, guys.
So something that we wanted to talk about in this podcast, you know, I get asked a lot of questions, and I've jotted them down in the notes in my phone. And one of the questions that I was asked was about purchasing horses. And I thought that that would be a really neat thing to kind of dedicate this podcast to for those of you who are buyers. Do you have your GPS on? Sorry, you guys. Aspen and I are, like I said, on the road. So this is going to be kind of candid. I don't edit my podcast. They are always just live. I think we were supposed to. It's not a big deal, though. I think we just missed our turn. We stopped to eat. My child is 2.5 and needed out of the car. But I do get a lot. And I do, I mean, yeah, we're good. Okay. Well, there's two of them.
Yeah, this one's a shorter one.
Yeah, okay. So I get a lot of questions about purchasing horses, and some of the questions that I had jotted down were, what do I look for in a horse that I'm purchasing? Or what are things that I try not to do or not to look for? And I thought this was a really great topic because I think as buyers, a lot of you guys are not privy to the horse trading industry. And it's something I've done. This is my 9th year of rehoming horses out of the kill pen. And before that, I made a living brokering barrel horses. And that's how I paid my way through what little bit of college I did go to. And when I was in high school, in my first year of college, I worked for Equiglobe. And they imported warm bloods from all over the world. We had Central America horses, polo horses. They would import polo horses. We had horses that were from Spain. We've had several from, I mean, countless numbers from the UK and from Germany. And so it was really neat getting to watch all of these high-end horses that they imported from all over the world. They would come there and they would assess them and find the proper U.S. brokers for each horse. So I really got to watch that for 6 years of my life. My dad trained racehorses, sold lots of match racing horses, lots of barrel prospects, lots of rope horses. And my dad always shopped the sale barn for his pony horses and made a living on the side of training racehorses in buying horses from sale barns, from kill pens, places like that, bringing them, basically quarantining them, getting them fat, fleshy, looking like $1 million, teaching them a trade, which was ponying racehorses, and then selling them to people that were on the racetrack that didn't have time to put all the steps in that are needed to make a good pony. So basically, I look back on my life and I'm like, you know what? I basically was getting a horse trader education from a very young age. I remember going to Rio Grande Sale Barn in El Paso to the Rio Grande Classic Sale with my dad when I was Tinley's age, and we would just be looking for geldings, like, just, and my dad never wanted the biggest, flashiest, fanciest one. He would always kind of buy the poor, like, you know, 10 to 12 year old gelding that was a little bit poor, that everybody had overlooked. My dad just had a couple of things that I look back on now that make me laugh. He didn't care how poor they were as long as they had a good mane and tail and good feet. That was like his criteria. They'd have, he could put weight on them. He could make them look like $1 million. He could have their teeth floated. But one thing he liked was a tail that touched the ground and a long, pretty mane, because that's what sold quickest. And so I always thought that was such a horse trader. Now that I'm older, I'm like, that's such a horse trader thing. Mane, tail, good feet. One, two, three. So I don't know. Aspen grew up riding. And in the last couple of years... You're going to grow up too? Tinley said she's going to grow up. Not right now. I need you to be little. So Aspen has been riding a lot of horses the last couple of years at sale barns in Washington and Oregon and where else? Is there one in Idaho?
No, mostly just Washington and Oregon.
I thought there was a sale in Idaho.
I have no idea.
Where is the kill pen up there? Remember they used to have Sunnyside or whatever it was called?
Sunnyside, is that still there?
Is it?
Yeah.
That's a long trek to Mexico. What does he do with his horses? Do you know?
Mexico.
It's a long trek. I don't know how you... I honestly don't know how you could have any profit if you have to truck them that far.
You know who that is, right?
No, I didn't know. But I don't know how. I mean, I'm going to say that that's a really long way to truck horses.
But there's tons of them because they come off the Yakima Reservation. So, I mean, they pile, like, truckload after truckload off the res.
Off the reservation? And the reservation horses. I don't know about that reservation. I've just seen the ones, like, in New Mexico and some in Arizona, and they are always super poor.
They are, because out where they are, it's on the 97, which goes into Oregon, into California and everything. It's super dry.
So is that where the lady that used to do... So, like, after I started rehoming Kilpin horses, it was 9 years ago. And there was a lady from up that direction. That's where she... Right? Isn't that where she... What was her name? She was kind of pretty. Had real big boobs.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
They kind of dissolved. It was like a group of them. And they had like maybe... like a network of Kilpin people. I think her name was maybe Sabrina. I don't remember. I haven't seen her name in a long time. I haven't. Sure. But I will tell you that I used to see her on Facebook a lot because she started doing this after I did. And she was really... she was kind of instrumental in a way in me. Like, okay, so I was one of the first people that started rehoming horses out of the Kilpin. It was 9 years ago. I don't ever remember anyone else doing it. And at first, people were really supportive. And then, so it, like, went in waves. Like, at first, everybody was like, yeah, let's save the Kilpin horses. Then it was like, well, that's a scam. You know, like, it went in waves. And then it went like, well, now everybody's doing it, and they're all scamming. And then it was like Animal Act. Even people within the barrel horse industry and the racehorse industry would be like, oh, the things that I see on Facebook about Kilpins are atrocious. How could you stand for that? Not realizing that, like, sometimes things you see on Facebook are not the way that they are. So it's like it went in waves. And now I think I'm starting to get respect back of people that are really watching, because I do so much behind the scenes where they're like, wait a minute. Lots of people do this, but she does it better. And I just remember when that lady came, she kind of did a website. And I was like, that's a good idea. I never thought about, like, making a whole... Like, she kind of... I was just doing it at the time to really save the horses.
Yeah.
Just on my personal Facebook. And she made a website. And I was like, you know what? That's a good idea. So I kind of contacted her and talked to her a minute. She was doing the ones from Sunnyside. And then... this is probably 6 years ago. Because I had been doing it for a lot... Just off my personal Facebook. So... This might have been 7 years ago. 6 or 7 years ago. So then a lady from Oklahoma started doing it. And her and I talked a little bit, like, on the phone. And we were going to make a group together and advertise our horses and their horses. Well, she made the group and then all of a sudden wouldn't let me put, like, had me add all of, like, people that had bought from me. And, yeah.
Then wouldn't let you post.
I made the mistake of letting her create the group. And yep. I was like a moderator. Mm-hmm. And she had me add, like, all of the people that had bought from me. Her name was C.
Oh, you're...
Yeah, and then she basically was like, well, I'm sorry, but I just don't feel comfortable allowing horses to be advertised in here that I haven't laid eyes on. And I was like, so what am I doing? Just basically...
Giving you everything.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was a learning curve. I will say, though, the Sabrina lady was not bad. And when I reached out to her, I told her, like, hey, I do the same thing you do. And I noticed you made a website, and I'm considering making a website. You know, what did you make it through? Have you found that it's easier? And she was like, I don't get a lot of attention on the website. She was like, I just have it so that people I have a master list, and it was like her way for people to be able to just go there and have a master list so they didn't have to scroll through all of the Facebook. And it was used to be easy to embed videos from Facebook onto there. So then I was like, you know what? I think I'm just going to make a page. And then I made a page, a group, a website. But then I took it a step further and started the email list. And then I started doing the subscriptions. And then, it just grew. It grew. But anyway, enough about Kilpins and all the shit that I've done. And back on topic. So I get asked a lot about purchasing horses. Like, what should I purchase? How should I know which horse to purchase? What do you look for in a horse? And that is the most subjective question that I've ever been asked because what you need, what Aspen needs, what I need, what Tinley needs, what Jacob needs, what my father needs, what my sister needs, is all completely different. And so I think it's important, one, to always go with your gut instinct. I have never, ever, ever bought a horse off of my gut instinct that ended up being a bad deal. I have bought some that I felt like I shouldn't have bought, but I felt bad for it, or, you know, things like that. And then later on, I was like, eh. But for me, because I have so many, it's a little bit different. But I will tell you this. I've never bought a horse I didn't learn from. And I've never bought a horse that I didn't improve its quality of life. And so for me, even if I buy the horse that's maybe not the horse for me, I always can do it the service of floating its teeth, warming it, making sure that it has all of the right attributes, like, you know, some groundwork, good farrier work before it leaves me, to set it up for success in its next home. And I have found, so for those of you who are like, I've bought the wrong horse, sis, like, I have been burned, I have been fucked over, I have, but have you really? I'm not saying that somebody didn't drug the horse. I'm not saying that somebody didn't sell you a shitter. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that sometimes I think horses end up in our life because they really needed us. So I want to put that out there before I start nitpicking horses. Are you cold? Before I start nitpicking horses to death and being like, don't buy this and don't buy that and don't. Because the truth is, I have seen horses that people bought and they were like, I got totally screwed. This horse was aced. But I feel like there is a way to get to the underlying issues and to really be able to rehabilitate that horse. And even though it's not the horse for you, to be able to move on from it and to be able to release it to its purpose, to a new person, and leave that horse better than where you found it. And I think there's beauty in that. I think there's good karma in that. And I think it's a great thing, to be completely honest. I think it's a great thing. So I get those calls though, where people are like, well, I want to buy from you, but I look at the videos and I'm so nervous because I went to this lady's house and I even rode it and it still was bad. And so it, you know, it was drugged. And I'm like, well, that's the thing about the horse industry, is you can drive 1,000 miles. You can ride the horse 5 times at somebody's house and still be screwed over because they've aced it or they've beauted it or they've, I mean, Aspen and I have a barn full of horses that we had to work with a little bit. Jasper, for instance, favorite horse on this planet, broke, amazing, absolutely think the world of him. But the first 2 weeks that he was at my property, you couldn't catch him in the stall. We had to rope him in a stall. And now he like sticks his head out the gate and is like everybody's best friend and just wants to be petted. But we had to go through some steps to figure out why he was so afraid of humans and to reassure him that humans aren't bad. Humans are not bad. But I can relate to that because I get a little bit bitter and sometimes I think humans are pieces of shit. And then I have to be reminded that not all humans are pieces of shit. Not all, and all humans are capable of being a piece of shit. But for the most part, humans want to be good. So I feel like sometimes you have to remind horses of that. Because, well, yes, ma'am, it is blue. It's blue. The sky is super, super blue here. It's the sun setting and it's like a beautiful blue. So Aspen, when you are looking to purchase a horse, what do you look for?
Well, am I purchasing it like in person or?
Yeah. Like, let's just say that you were like, okay, Aspen's going to buy a horse and you're going to buy a horse that, for me and you, it's hard because you and I are probably always going to resell what we buy.
Yeah.
So when you start looking for horses, what are things that you're like, this is what I look for?
Well, I mean, one of my big things is if it's one of my going to be personal horses and maybe resell, I like a horse with good conformation.
Okay.
Mane and tail, of course.
Yep.
I mean, it's hard to say, I guess.
So I'm really funny. I no longer buy horses, and I am the one that's like, my dad trains racehorses. I used to train racehorses all in my 20s. And I used to be a freaking stickler on conformation But one thing I will tell you is I do not judge a horse based on conformation, period.
I don't judge them just based on conformation, but at the same time, I don't want one leg sticking this way and one leg sticking out that way.
And see, I'm totally okay with that now. And this is why. I've learned that by the time they make it past 5 or 6 years old when their bones are fused, if they're still sound, their conformation isn't going to hinder them. It's just, and I've learned that even though it might not be perfect for a performance horse prospect, my good friend Paula or my good friend Karen that want to go trail ride, that horse is going to take care of them and be perfect. So I sold a horse not very long ago named White Sox, and he was really a little offset in his knees. So he wasn't calf-kneed, but he was a little offset in the knees. And the people that bought him, he's the perfect horse for them. Does that make sense? Like, he's the perfect horse for them.
That's totally
true. And I think that the horse probably had been culled because he was a head horse.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people would show up to look at him, and he was offset in the knees, and they would be like, they would just, you know, oh, I don't want something with crooked knees. I don't want something with crooked knees. But he walk, trots, lopes. He's made it this far. He's never taken a lame step. So somebody was able to purchase a $10,000 horse for under five because you know what I'm saying, because he maybe didn't have perfect conformation. So that's another thing you have to decide, like, are you wanting perfect conformation, or is conformation something that doesn't, like, your eye isn't trained to that? And it took me years to say that my eye is very trained to conformation and I spot those things immediately. Mm-hmm. But to say, you know what, I've seen a lot of horses with offset knees and it's never bothered any of them. So that's not a flaw to me anymore. That's just, it's like a human that's a little knock-kneed.
But yeah, no, I didn't really think about it that way.
Yep.
So now that you say that, I would.
Now, if I, now listen, I will say, if I'm buying a yearling barrel racing prospect, and that prospect is going to have to be a performance horse, and it's going to have to undergo strenuous training at a very young age, I'm going to be a lot pickier about conformation at that point, because at that point its conformation can lead to unsoundness because of the rigorous training it's going to go through to be a performance horse.
Yes.
But for trail horses, I don't even find that team roping is quite as hard on horses, maybe as racing and barrel racing and jumping. I don't find that. I think that racing might be harder on horses than barrel racing in the front end, but barrel racing is harder on a horse in the rear end.
I would say cutting tops it for front end.
Oh, yeah. I think cutting and reining. So, I think, hands down, the most crippled horses that we've ever bought are cutters and reiners.
Oh, yeah.
Crippled.
It is so hard on the front end.
Like, they are so unable to even be repaired. Like, I've unfortunately pulled some horses from the kill pen before that I wanted to rehabilitate because they were so broke and so good. And the x-rays were so bad. There was just nothing. Like, now that we have, like, the performance horse rescue stuff, there are some of those that maybe we could have operated on to really change their life. But, like, nothing short of operating on them could have maybe fixed them.
Which is, I mean, it's sad because those horses have either made so much, they're so broke, and they're so nice, and they deserve...
It just took a toll.
It's really hard on them.
And that's another hard thing for me, is to try to decide, like... what should ship to slaughter and what shouldn't. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other podcast. It's a whole other topic. But those kind of horses right there make it the hardest for me because I can't understand how somebody could invest and put so much effort into a horse to get them to that point and have such little regard for their long-term soundness in the process.
Yep.
I just never will be able to understand that. I just don't have that heart.
Well, and I think
don't.
A lot of the big cutting and reining facilities, they have such a big volume of horses that sometimes I think that they could take better care of them and do more for them so they don't become crippled so fast.
Yeah, so I think that it's, like you just said, but I think there's a lot of, there's a lack of attention to detail in the individual horses.
Yes.
I worked very briefly at a cutting horse outfit in Oklahoma. It didn't last but 2 seconds. I thought the lady there was a fucking quackadoodle. I still think she's a quackadoodle. I just, you know, she wanted to talk about, like, minerals and supplements, and they were the most crippled horses I'd ever seen, and the boys would lope them and ace them and lope them and put bonnets on them and lope them.
And it just makes them all 20 times worse.
Oh, my God. So they had tack collars. I had never seen a tack collar before I went to that cutting horse facility, and it's literally a breast collar with thumb tacks on the inside. Have you ever seen that?
I have.
And if they don't stop or don't pick their shoulders up, the breast collars had like a, like an English breast collar with the, like the yoke over the neck.
Yep.
And they would grab that yoke and bump them. And I had never seen, my dad would have fucking flipped out. Because my dad is the big one that's like, if you're going to make a living off of horses, respect them. If you're, a horse doesn't know what it costs, it only knows, you know, it doesn't know what you gave for it. It only knows how you treat it. I mean, I've always been taught these things. So to see people have such little disregard. And I didn't agree with anything I saw there at all. And it was just all over my face all the time. You know what I mean? To where, like, there was just no way I could work there even briefly because it was just absolutely insane. Like, I'd never seen a tack collar. I had never seen them put, like, okay, one thing I did see in the English industry that Hartmann would never do, I saw trainers have the same thing, tacks on the inside of their boots,
yep,
of their horses, so yep, they wouldn't hit rails. And I remember Hartmann saying one time that you can tell when somebody is too ignorant to be a trainer when they have to use equipment like that to train a horse.
Exactly.
And one time he said something to me that was really cool. He said, all horses make, they just might not be making in the sport or at the level that you would desire, but that doesn't mean that they're not perfect for somebody else in the same sport at a different level, like exactly, dressage horses. He had bought a couple of dressage horses one time, two of them fantastic, high level, and there was a third one, and he said, well, I bought him because they kind of threw him in on the deal. And I said, well, if he's not going to make like a Grand Prix horse, why? And he said, but I have clients that don't need a Grand Prix horse. They need something that's going to be consistent and steady and go through the motions that they can take one lesson a week on, and that horse is going to pick up next week right where they left off, never buck, never get fresh, never be a big, strong. Because he also said something I found to be really true, that when you get horses that are Olympic level, whether it be Grand Prix, NFR level, world champion racehorses, they all have a lot of presence, and they're powerful, and they're quirky, and they possess a lot of class, and they command your respect, but they can be ornery. And there are women out there that want to ride dressage and go to shows on a big, beautiful warm blood, but they don't need all that because they're going to get intimidated and they're going to lose their love for it. And that's when I learned that it's still okay to invest a lot of time and money in a lesser quality horse, because it's going to be just as big, if not bigger, of a blessing for somebody that's a lesser quality rider. Like, I hate to put it that way, but...
Well, it's so true.
It is the truth. And it's why sometimes when you see in my barn, you'll see, like, you know, I mean, not that Pedro, I'll just use Peyote and Pedro for example. Peyote is sticking around because he had to have limb perfusions and just a ton of stuff went wrong with his nerving, and now we've got him healed and he's fallen in love with my daughter. But that horse was like a world-class athlete and he is so good to my kid. And then we have Pedro, and Pedro is a little team roping horse, kind of a lower numbered rider's horse. Not overly athletic, but super broke. Really bomb-proof down the trail. And if you look at him, I take just as good of Pedro as I do of Peyote, because Pedro is going to be perfect for somebody too. Like, you still have to value that lesser... I'm using like air quotations, but lesser quality animal.
Yeah.
Because that lesser quality animal maybe end up being a bigger blessing than anything else in the barn, because he's going to go to the right person for him and just give them all the joy in the world. So that's what I learned from Hartmann and what I took away. I mean, this is somebody that's like importing $30,000 and $40,000 and $50,000 like Olympic quality prospect warm bloods, and he would still import on occasion like very average type horses, because they still needed their human and they were still going to be perfect for certain people. What, baby? Yeah, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So, Aspen, what are things that you've learned in horse trading that you think people should know? Like, is there anything that you're like, you know, something I've learned is that...
Well, I mean, over the years, I've ridden for a countless amount of people, from old-time cowboys to prissy show people.
Yeah.
And... I mean, there's just so many different ways that people trade horses, honestly.
Yeah.
So the stuff that you do was nowhere close to what, I guess, Washington people did. The old cowboy that I rode for, he,
What's wrong, baby? What's wrong?
Sorry.
It's okay. She's just, what is she wanting to watch?
I don't know what this is.
Is she offline?
No, I got it.
All right, you guys, sorry. So what would he do?
Like, so what? His son had a big ranch up in Okanagan, and we were in Ellensburg, so he would get some horses off his ranch, some that he's either raised or bought, and he'd go buy some from a Toppenish sale, and we'd take them to Enumclaw or Moses Lake or, I mean, Eugene.
Oh, so he just bought traders. Like, he would buy at one sale to trade at another sale.
Yes. And he also had some personal horses, but he's super old fashioned. So being 78 years old and still getting on broncs and, I mean, just the ways that he did everything was so different. And I guess you could just say old timey. It was really weird for me. And like you were saying about the tack collars, he had something kind of similar.
Yeah. To keep a bucker from getting its head down?
Well, he wanted these horses ride bridleless in the ring, so he'd have me get on them, and I hated it, and I told him I hated it, and I don't want to do this, and being who he is, you get on that damn horse, and you...
Yeah.
So, it was this big, long strand of barbed wire fencing that he had wrapped in a loop, and on the top side, he wrapped electrical tape around it for where you hold on to. And that's how you got that horse to turn and stop until they got sensitive to that. That's what you rode them in.
That's nuts.
It is horrible.
Yeah, the cutting horse facility used tack collars. And then they had another one that was like a rope that went from the saddle horn around their neck. Uh-huh. And it had like barbed wire wrapped around it right at the neck. So like a bronc that wanted to get its head down, anytime it would put its head down and pull that saddle, it would like just
dig into them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one thing that was absolutely horrible. But then you go in the ring and you show these horses and people are like, oh my goodness, blah, blah. And that's never, ever, ever something I would do personally.
Oh, yeah. Because like I hated doing it. Yeah, there's no way. I think that, so with my horses that ride bridleless, I think that what makes them ride bridleless has nothing to do with that. It's that they respect us and have kind of learned to, like...
Trust
us?
Yeah. That's what I would say, the respect and the trust.
Because Rooster is a horse that has kind of been the opposite. Like, nobody had ever really rode him bridleless. Everybody had a bit in his mouth, but everybody has spurred him to death. Mm-hmm. And he was so rushed in the ring that he had gotten kind of on his forehand from people just ripping into him with spurs. And he would, like, untrack his hip just trying to get out of his own way. So... One thing I've noticed about horse sales, though, is this is what I will tell you. For every 10 horses we buy, there's one that's probably advertised at the sale for what it should be. So when you see them with Aspen and I on video, we kind of have filtered through what did they say about this horse and is it the truth? Like, is that really what this horse is? And sometimes I will say I feel in my heart like, man, this horse was grossly misrepresented. But that doesn't mean... in a bad way. Like, I've had some horses that they have represented to us as a high-numbered team roping horse that could take somebody to the NFR. And you want to say, well, if that's the truth, then why do you have him at the local sell barn? But people are stupid. They're really, truly fucking stupid. Because, like, that team roper, in his mind, that's what he's looking for.
Yep.
And so he's thinking, if he lies to you and tells you that this is an NFR caliber team roping horse, and he's a team roper, you're going to give him big, big money for this horse. When if he would just tell the truth, hey, this horse really didn't cut it as a team roping horse, but he is a fantastic trail horse. My wife could ride him. My kids could ride him. You know, if somebody's a low numbered roper and you're just wanting to kind of rope with your buddies at the house, he's going to be a great horse. The truth is that's what would sell that horse because it's the truth and there are people looking for that specifically.
Yep.
To where if you take the story he told, he thought he was upselling the horse. He was like, you know, putting bread on poop and you know, thinking that's what you want. You know, you want... And that's what's really sad is then the horse gets bought by somebody that's looking for that team roping horse, gets it home and thinks the horse is a big shitter.
Yep.
And then it ends up at the sale again with the same story because that's the story they bought it with. And the truth is if somebody would just back up and say like, hey, this horse really didn't work for this, but it's a good horse. And I think it needs to go to somebody to be a really good trail horse. If you want to rope with your buddies, you know, he's pretty solid. He's just not fast enough to really be a high-numbered roper's horse. There's a whole market for that. But people get so stuck in feeling like what they're looking for is the only thing out there.
Well, I think one of the other things is a lot of the horse traders, air quotations here, all they're looking for is to make money.
That's
and
right.
And, I mean, I could count on if I would need tons of people to count how many horse traders I know that buy a horse on Monday and sell it on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
And make up a whole story about it.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, like I said, there's good horse traders and there's bad horse traders. And the bad ones are what make all of them look bad. Just because they want that quick buck.
Well, and the thing that I've noticed, you know, I think I'm supposed to go right. Are you sure?
Yep.
Okay. One thing that I've noticed in the horse trader industry is that most horse traders are, like you said, are just making to look a looking to make a dollar. And the one thing that Jacob and I in the last 9 years have been so grateful is that we have made a living out of this to the point that we can breathe between loads of horses. Like, so because there's still a base of the market, and if a horse is a true piece of shit and it's going to flip over and kill somebody, or it's going to be a bucker, I don't have to ace it. Like, I've always been grateful for that. Like, I can actually just release that horse from this life. Like, hey buddy, your damage is done. Like, you're not repairable. And I don't have to ace that horse and try to sell him to somebody because there's still a market for him in my life. Where I feel like other horse traders don't have that. So they have to take it back to a sale, or they have to take it back somewhere and ace it and try to sell it just to recoup some of their loss. And I don't have that because we do have the slaughter avenue. So if a horse is like truly dangerous or truly bad, we do not have to sell it. Like, there's been horses that have come to my house that Aspen have said, I'm not getting on that one. That's okay. Like, and that's okay at my house, where at the old cowboy's house, that's not going to be okay. Like, you're getting your fucking ass up there.
He would just snub me up to the horse he's on, and we'd ride off. And I couldn't tell you, I broke my tailbone. I have destroyed my body from riding for him, because he's an old cowboy and you get it done.
Yep, you just get it done. And that's just not the way that we do things at my house, because it's not what's best for the horses.
Well, and that's what I love so much about what you do is...
Yep.
You don't lie to people about horses. You're not going to get somebody hurt. The horses that deserve, I mean, I don't know if deserve is a good word, to be
This is the thing. I feel like the horses that need to be shipped can be shipped.
Yes.
The horses that need to be resold can be resold. And the horses that need to just kind of have a 2-week or a 3-week break because they've been on the trader circuit and what they really need is to just rehabilitate, we're not in a money bind to where I have to put the, like Jasper, I'm not coming off of his price. And I had a guy offer me pretty decent money for him today, and I just don't feel like that, you know what, if you can't pay what I'm asking for Jasper, you're not the right home for him, but there will be the right horse for you in your budget. But it also tells me that Jasper's not ready to go. Jasper came to me with a lot of trust issues in human. He has made exponential.
You can catch him in a field now.
You can literally walk out to the pasture and he will catch you. And we had to rope him in a stall the first week, 2 weeks, that he was on my property. Like, we had to get a lariat rope. And actually, the first time we roped him, we couldn't even get in the stall with him. Jacob had to put the rope through the window and like catch him, like dummy catch him. And I was like, Jesus, what are we gonna do with this big guy? We didn't even know if he was broke at that point. I was like, surely he's broke, he's got saddle marks, you know. And that's why he was like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because they rode hard and they're put away wet, and they just know, oh, you're going to catch me, you're going to ride the living shit out of me, you're going to hit me, and you're going to put me away.
Yep. And that horse has just made so much difference just in such a small amount of time. But something I want to talk to you guys about is, okay, let's say that you've already bought a horse and you feel like you got really screwed over, or let's say that you are looking for a horse and you don't want to be screwed over. The first thing I want to tell you is it's very important when a horse comes home to you. I do some, like, one thing I did with Jasper that I feel like helped him is I went in the stall with him with some Palo Santo. This sounds really crazy. You know, and just some energy work. And what I did was, is I just wanted to release all of the energy ties to him. I feel like horses, just like human, get soul ties. And let's say that there was a cowboy that beat him and whipped him and hurt him and used him and abused him and didn't care about him. We need to release that energy from his life. And I'm just telling you that one thing I do when we go to video horses is I really try to just do all of the cord cutting, which is just where you release any energy that's attached to this horse from their past, and please just allow this horse's future from here forward, for their future, to be on a very solid foundation of love, kindness, respect, and to please let the right human for this horse come into their life. And I think that's important. I think that if you focus on saying, you know, whatever horse I pick, I'm going to go with my gut, the first horse that I'm like, you know what, this horse speaks to me, this horse makes me feel something, I'm attracted to this horse. Even sometimes if they're too much horse or maybe not enough horse, I have found that if you go with your gut and buy the horse that you're attracted to, a lot of times you can go through those steps of clearing their energy, of, you know, really kind of rebalancing their vibration and kind of desensitizing them. I know this sounds really crazy, but I still love Pat Pirelli's 7 Games. Mm-hmm. I play those with my horses that I own personally because I have had a ton of success with that. I know that, like, Pat Pirelli is kind of outdated and people are like, oh, I do this guy and oh, I do. But those base, I'm not saying I buy into everything he says. I still think he's a good horseman that made a lot of money teaching people that needed to be taught. So I'm never going to take that away from him. I prefer Clinton Anderson over Pat Pirelli, personality wise. Yes. But that's just because I think that Pat Pirelli is a little bit of a soft ass kind of man. And, like, I want somebody to kind of talk to me ugly. Like, it's okay, Clinton. You can tell me I need to go jog this muffin top off. And
yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm okay with it. Like, so I'm just saying I prefer Clinton's very cut and dry personality. Like, when I've heard him say, like, shit about women that are, and people are like, oh, I just can't support a guy that would, and I'm like, well, Karen, the truth is, he's not wrong. Like, we don't always like to hear the truth, but I don't mind Clinton Anderson. I actually prefer him personality-wise. But he has some really good tools and some really good exercises that get horses to being thinking animals. So something I want to teach you guys right here, right now, is that animals are a right brain prey animal, left brain thinking animal, and their brains barely connect. They literally almost have two separate lobes that barely connect. And anything you teach the horse on the right, you have to teach them on the left. And horses do everything to the left. You mount from the left, all of that, because they are left brain thinking animals. And the more you do to the left, the more you get them thinking instead of reacting. Yay! Everything you do on the right is going to be based on reaction because they're right brain prey animals. So I want for you guys to know, if you mount your horse from the right, you need to do it from the left. If you dismount from the left, you need to dismount from the right. It's important to teach a horse everything on both sides. And I feel like that's another thing. I've also found that pretty much 90% of horses that buck, it's pain related. Either it's pain, pissed off. And I've told people that horses either can't handle the pressure you've put them in, they're in pain,
or straight fear, trying to get away.
Right. It's because of pain. And I don't think, so I think most, well, and I'm talking about horses that are, like, already broke. And, like,
oh, that are already broke. Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
that are, like, already broke, and they've started bucking. Bad saddle fit. They don't trust you. I've actually really never had a horse that was just a bronc to the core that we couldn't fix. I mean, even Sierra. So, I have a really cool barrel mare. that started doing some really sketchy shit. And there was no excuse for it. Nobody's ever been mean to her. And come to find out, she had kissing spine. We x-rayed her back. We operated. She started doing it again, like a year and a half later. And we re-x-rayed, and her spine was touching again. And it actually had almost fused together. And it's really bad. And now she probably is just going to be a broodmare, because we can't take the chance of her hurting somebody if we just keep operating and it keeps growing back together. Like, she's got, like, some kind of a bone. I don't know. Her bones are calcifying weird. So we did look into it to see if it's hereditary. And people say it's hereditary. Other people say it's not. And it's one of those things that's not researched enough to really know if it's truly hereditary or not. So we don't know. Which makes me leery to breed her. You know? It makes you leery because you don't ever... Not because... What?
Is there some way you can test her to...
No, because they don't actually know if kissing spine is hereditary or not.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
Yep, they haven't had enough research to find horses that have kissing spine that they can go back and check both parents, because the stud owners don't want their studs checked because...
Yeah, then it's bad.
Yeah. Like, so it's hard because in the breeding industry, when you start talking about kissing spine, stallion owners are like, well, it's not my stud. And mare owners are like, well, it's not my mare. And so then what would have to happen is you would have to have a foal that had kissing spine and then check both parents. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then also grandparents, because then you need to see that the grandparents have it. Well, now we have 6 different horses.
Well, and can you really even tell when they're just a foal, when nothing has really even developed yet?
Well, that's the other thought process, is that it's improper training. You know, horses hollowing their back out.
Yeah.
And not using their spine correctly. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe why, you know, too high-headed. So there's lots of different theories. So you just never know. So then I'm reluctant to breed her, because you don't want to breed a mare and then her foals live a life in pain, you know, not being able to perform and be the best of their ability due to this. So anyway, it's just really tough, because I've really never had anything that was just a true bronc to the core that didn't have a good excuse. So... And on lame horses, this is my thing. I will say, we've all done it. We've all bought a horse, got it home, and it was lame. And they're normally the best ones, but they're lame. And one thing I want for you guys to understand is this is where a good vet plays. And I think that when people buy a horse from me, we have vet day on Tuesday, and I tell people, go ahead and get a lameness exam. Not because the horse is baseline lame, but because we want to prevent anything that could be coming. So let's say he does flexions and we find a knee. That doesn't mean that that horse is crippled or that that knee is bad. It just means that there's a little premature arthritis starting to appear based on these flex exams. And we can go ahead and put some medication in that knee that will reverse the damage that's been done and get that horse rejuvenated back to where we don't have to worry about that knee now in the future. There are some really great products on the market that can prevent problems.
Well, and one, like, so I know some people that they're totally against injecting or anything that involves, like, putting something into that knee, but they also need to realize that it's not hurting anything. It is helping them. And
it's helping them, for sure. And there's lots of things that we can do now that don't have to go in the joint. There's Prevacox if it's just some mild inflammation and not actual arthritis. You know, sometimes a horse can just have been through a lot and they've got a little sore joint. But I tell people all the time, and this is the God's honest truth, it's better to know right now what's coming and do what we can to prevent it than to look up a year from now and your favorite horse you ever had has gone lame. And so when I do a vet check, I don't ever want to say, like, oh, is this horse sound or not sound? If you do enough flexing on every horse, you can find a little problem. What I want to know is what's coming. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm buying a horse, I will buy a horse without a vet check, get it home, and then take it to my vet. And people are like, why didn't you do the vet check first? And I tell people all the time, it's so crazy. I bought this horse off of gut instinct, so it didn't matter what the vet found. I was going to buy it anyway. And they were like, well, what if it's got something? And I'm like, great. You know how much technology and how much there is? Oh, I thought that was that for me?
It's load out for campers.
Oh. So, yeah, I want to know. Like, I want to take it to my vet, and I want my vet and I to discuss, like, okay, if we find a little foot thing, is this an OSFOS thing? Is this a corrective shoeing thing? Is this just maybe a foot supplement so we can thicken up the soles?
So, and I haven't done a whole lot with OsFos. What exactly?
So OsFos is great. I've heard a lot about it. It's great for bone pain. I like PRP and Renovo also, but they're both for arthritis and joints. So I have found that we can do a lot with a little bit of money. Obviously, any of these things are not free, but for around $250, you can do a lot for a joint. For $250, you can do OsFos. So OsFos, let's say that you have a horse that's got a navicular cyst and you're worried that they're going to start to have a hole in the navicular bone. You can do OsFos and it will actually help the bone to remodel properly by helping with the way that the body processes the phosphorus to model the bone. Tildren is very similar. It works similar. I like Tildren. I like OsFos better. I've had OsFos work for fusing hocks. I've had it work for horses with sore spines, necks, coffin bones, navicular cyst, ring bone. I've found it to be great with ring bone. For ring bone, side bone, and navicular, I like to do, and splint bones and things like that, I like to do OsFos and then follow up with apple cider vinegar and Equibone. And then do OsFos again 90 days later, and I have been able to get about 90% of horses sound and like a permanent soundness, not like a,
fix it for six months.
Yeah, I've been able to get them permanently sound, which means that we've gone back and actually cured, for lack of better words, you know, we've gone back and cured the problem instead of it just being like a bute. You know, you can bute them to help with inflammation so they look sounder. OsFos and Equibone to me are products that go hand in hand, and I have absolutely, without a doubt, found that they can absolutely cure navicular, side bone, ring bone, splints, some types of knee arthritis, depending on where the arthritis is or if it's from bone pain or if it's from joint pain. So,
and that, well, that would be something that maybe we should touch on, like on Facebook or something, where there's more people that'll watch it, because a lot of the people, not just in your group and stuff, that buy horses from sale barns and stuff like that, and they get their horse home and realize it's lame, and we're just gonna put it down and resell it. Like me, I didn't know about all this stuff until I really started watching you, and I didn't know about OsFos. I didn't know about any of that. And it's not just a cover-up. It helps long-term. And I think a lot more people need to realize that it's out there. So when they buy that horse from the sale barn that turns up lame because someone just buted it or whatever, that there's, I guess you could say, hope.
There is hope. And I tell people,
you don't just have to put down your horse or resell
it. I tell people, if you have ever bought a horse and it didn't come from me and you got it home and you feel like you were completely fucked over, instead of shit canning that horse and throwing it back into the sale barn atmosphere, call me and let me try to help you. Even if it's still not the horse for you and you're totally upset and you're like, you know what, this just isn't the horse for me, let me help you so that we can get that horse rehabilitated, whether it be mentally, physically, spiritually. Sometimes there's more broken pieces than just a foot. Like, oh, it might be a little bit navicular. But sometimes I have found that as you start to correct the navicular, the horse isn't going to get 100% till you start to fix the things that are wrong with it spiritually. And so I'm a completely different nutbag when it comes to this, because I feel like if you have a horse and they are chronically having issues, I see barrel racers all the time. Their horse will have a torn suspensory, and then it'll tie up, and then it will colic, and then this same horse keeps having reoccurring problems over and over and over again. Because no matter how much money you spend at the vet, until you fix that horse spiritually, and you get rid of the negative, like soul ties, and the negative energy, and the expectations maybe even that you've placed on it that are not its destiny, you're never going to have a horse that's going to just be 100%. And I've had to do that. I've had horses. I had a little bay mare. I love her to death, but she just kept having all kinds of issues. And the truth was, is that the girl that owned her before me never really wanted to sell her. And so even though she sold her, I ended up with her, she had such a strong negative vibration surrounding her because that girl never wanted to sell her. Like, she needed to sell her. Her time in her life was up. She needed to sell her so that she could buy a fraternity prospect because she thought she wanted to train fraternity horses. So she sold her, bought the fraternity prospects, and then when they didn't pan out because she's young, she really didn't know what she was doing, then she was really bitter. And it was about the time that she started becoming really bitter that she sold the mare, that the mare started having every ailment in the world. And it's because there was still a really bad soul connection there. And that negative energy was projected on my mare heavily, that girl never wanted to sell her. She was bitter that she sold her. She was bitter that the mare was running good. She was bitter that she was clocking. And do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so that it's almost like having an electric fence tied from me to you, and then I can zap you with negative energy because we have that connection. So you have to remember, and I actually had an energy worker come in and clear her energy, and she's been 110% sound since then. She stopped going in the alley. She was like having feet issues. She developed like a navicular cyst. I mean, the mare had like all kinds of problems, and I was like, man, this is not, I was changing her diet. I was doing, I mean, everything I knew. And when that energy worker came in and kind of balanced her chakras and released all of those old past ownership kind of ties. I mean, she laid her hands on her and is the one that told me there's a past owner, which then when she told me that, it was kind of spooky because I had watched. I really like the girl I bought her from. So I don't want to talk bad because I really like that girl. Do you know what I'm saying? But I did watch her buy colts. I did watch her struggle. I did watch her sell them for less than what she even paid for them because, you know, they weren't going to make, well, they may have, but she just didn't have the tools in her toolbox at 19 years old to be a professional fraternity trainer. Does that make sense? Because my mare was like a really finished mare. She had made the high school rodeo finals on her, the national finals, and she sold her for, I mean, we bought her so that after I had Tinley, I had something really, really, really solid. So, does that make, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, we bought her. I knew her when she was a four-year-old. I thought she was fantastic. She went to Karina Morris.
Okay.
And Karina did really good with her. But then after I had Tinley, I was like, you know what? I want that mare for me. And so, I had to have energy work done. And I hate this because I never want to say like that the owner ex-owner, here's the thing, it was completely unintentional. It was never an intentional, like she wasn't wishing bad on the mare. She wasn't wishing bad on me. In fact, she loves the mare and she keeps in contact. And does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes just being like, man, I wish I wouldn't have sold her. Man, I really am like, God, I hate that she's winning and I sold her and I should have kept her. It's just that is negative emotion.
Yes.
And because you really mean it, it can manifest something negative.
Yep.
Because you mean it from your soul. She really hates that she sold her. So anyway, sometimes when you end up with a horse and they're having issues, sometimes you have to work with them spiritually as much as you do physically, mentally. Sometimes it's important to start. I tell people when you first get them, I have people that will get a horse from me and send me a video of them riding it like 2 days later.
Yeah.
Oh, I've had some that they unloaded it, tied it to the trailer and rode it. And I'm like, the horse just rode 1,000 miles. And I understand they're excited. And 99.9% of the horses that leave my property, we have done energy work on. So I know that they're leaving me fresh and ready to bond. But I will tell you that I absolutely think that that's such a disservice.
It is, 100%.
If it were me, I would... Go ahead.
I mean, making that horse travel 1,000 miles, whole new people, whole new atmosphere. You unload it, tie it to a trailer, saddle it, and go yeehaw. I mean, it's such a disservice to that horse.
But I will say that 99.9% of the time it goes really good.
Oh, yeah.
And they tell me how much they love them and it's great updates and I'm fine. I'm not picking on any of you. And if you're thinking, oh my God, that's me, I did that, it's fine. We're not mad at you for it. Like, it's just, I honestly feel like if you will take 7 days, I do things in 9. So 9 is the number of Zeus. 9 is the number of the sun. 9 is the number of setting yourself up for success, you know, like the ultimate success. So I tell people give it 9 days of just bonding, catch, brush, treats. I like the CBD cookies because I think that hemp really helps a horse to vibrate on a tranquil level. Give CBD cookies, spend 9 days, 9 days of just bonding. Then spend 9 days, okay? 9 days of, you know, maybe just, now let's lunge the horse and let's do groundwork for 9 days. Let's lunge both directions. A lot of horses that leave us have never lunged before. It's something you have to teach them. Get your little carrot stick. It is black outside, baby. So, and then 9 days of riding, 9 rides. And then that's 3, which is very, you know, 9 and 3 are like variables of each other. So that's the way that I do it. And I think that, I think it's what's best. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, I would say the same thing, and I can see how a lot of people get really impatient because, I bought this horse. That would be me too.
Oh, yeah.
But I also think that it is really important to not just put a horse through a lot of stressful stuff and get on it right when it gets there. Because don't get me wrong,
so this is what I've told people. In the first 9 days, I work spiritually to just bond, clear everything. Then 9 days on their mental focus, 9 days on groundwork, 9 days of mental health. And then on those 9 days that you ride them, work on flexing each direction, work on breaking at the pole, work on backing up. Don't just go and do whatever you're going to do. Just kind of keep it simple and help them to physically be able to understand what you're asking, because you're going to use your hands different than Aspen, who uses her hands different than me, who used my hands different than the people before us. And so I think that those 9 rides need to be more of like, hey, buddy, by the way, if I want to go right, this is the way that I ask. Hey, buddy, if we want to go left, this is the way I ask. And then if the horse is like, well, I don't understand that, then you can go, okay, well, I'm going to try a couple of things so that we can find a happy medium in the way that I ask and the way you want to be asked, the way you've taught to be asked. And I think that's another thing. I'll see people that will contact me and be like, hey, I rode this horse and the bit's not working. It's not that the bit isn't working. It's that that horse has been ridden by people that would kind of drop their hand and kind of pull, you know, kind of do that little cheat move, you know, that little like one hand turn, but they're really kind of direct reining, and they want to ride the horse like Jacob does. Jacob rides with one hand in the middle of the reins like John Wayne, and I can't stand it. I hate it. So he can get on a horse of mine that's broke to death and make it look like a puke, and I can get on Jacob's horse and make it kick its rear end out and get on its front end, because I'm not sitting back like steering it like a freaking Pac-Man video game. I tell Jacob, you steer your damn horse like a Pac-Man video game. Stop it. I hate it. Like this.
Oh, God. I've never seen him ride.
Oh, yeah. Him and his dad both just have that old school, you know, like that old cowboy, you know, like in the middle of the reins and just real, a lot of leg and real one handy, you know, and I'm like, Jesus, man. And I really ride kind of forward in my body and forward with my body weight and kind of on the balls of my feet like an English person. And I'm just telling you, I can get on Jacob's good horse. He has a red horse at home that's, I mean, honestly, one of the nicest horses that we own. I can get on him and he looks like a pig. But Jacob cannot hardly ride anything of mine because they want to gap their mouth and like turn their head whenever he pulls that way. They're like, what are you doing to me, man? So I'm just telling you, now if Jacob were to ride my horse every day, it would get better because my horse would start to understand this is the way that he's asking me and it's different than her, but I understand. But that first ride, it's rough. And the same thing, I've rode his horse now a lot and now I've had to learn, like, he wants you to get in the middle of the reins and use a lot of leg and steer him like a 1954 Western. You know what I'm talking about now?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's what Jacob rides like. And I've never had, I mean, pretty much everything we've ever bought that Jacob kept or Jacob rode a lot, it took them a couple of rides to ride good for him because he rides like that. And I'm like, that's just not how people do it anymore. And then I see people in the videos that are like, yeah, that's how I like one to ride around whenever he rides his gelding. And I'm like, people still do this. mostly males and mostly trail riding males that are like, you know, they want that one hand, like, I call it John Wayne broke.
Okay. Does Jacob cut both, like, reins flip the same way?
Yep.
No!
It looks like Jacob. He's steering a Pac-Man game.